Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is December 5th, 2019. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, it's begun. It's that time of year, the year of 2019, which has been a remarkable year, is drawing to a close, and so the time has come to celebrate. It's the holiday season, my favorite time of year, so merriment, family, friends, and feasting are in order. I hope you take some time this holiday to really enjoy. Our holiday greetings will go out tomorrow, but you can see it now. It's up at holidaygreetings.solaria.com, and you can see all of our holiday greetings back to 2010. We'll have Christmas music every week on the Friday. This Friday, we start with Elvis singing I'll Be Home for Christmas with lots of pictures of Graceland. It's highly appropriate for me as my road trip music. I've had a wonderful stay here in Texas, and I leave tomorrow to drive back to Hickory Valley. I want to give a big shout out to the folks in Texas who've made this such a fantastic visit. The best part of doing what I do is you get to meet and hang out with the best people. Speaking of meeting great people, the events coming up, we have Malvern outside of Philadelphia on December 20th. I'll be up in Pennsylvania for Christmas with family, and so we had a great time last year. I hope you, if you're in the area, you come, because you'll meet some fantastic people. And then, of course, the Lake Constance Opera Hang next summer at Lake Constance. You can watch the video we've posted. It's on the homepage. Just a note about cybersecurity as you think of Christmas gifts. The goal this Christmas, one of the goals, is to get you to put as many access points for mind control and entrainment into your home, whether it's Alexa, Wi-Fi, Siri, digital TV. The Internet of Things means you're going to be under 24-hour surveillance, and that means you're going to be linked up with systems, including ones that do organized crime and Operation Gladio. So don't believe this stuff is cool and fashionable. Don't give it to people for Christmas, and I hope you don't fall for it. Environment is increasingly risky, so please don't invite strangers into your intimate space, and that includes your digital intimate space. For those of you who are interested in giving people gift subscriptions or wrap-up hardcovers, you can do so at the store. There are holiday packages with gift wrapping. We'll send a note if you want it. If you need help, just feel free to call customer service. Wrap-ups. I was hoping the ESG PDF would publish this week. It turns out it's going to publish next week and go to the printers. And then State of the Currency PDF will follow, I hope, shortly thereafter. So we had quite a backlog as a result of the real game of missing money. It blew a hole in the pipeline, but the pipeline's now filling up, so they're going to start coming out to you in short order. And again, I thank you for your patience. It's a whole new look that I absolutely love, and I think you will too. Our theme tonight is preparing for the new year. This is the time of year that it's very important to take a look at your legal and financial commitments and make sure you do everything necessary at the end of the year to take care of sort of taxes and regulation. For those of you on a calendar tax year, as certainly the U.S. subscribers are, it's the time to take a look at your year in tax planning and make sure if there's anything you should do, whether estimated payments or write-offs, you take it now. I put a link in the Money and Markets commentary to the Kiplinger article in the year-end tax plan. Some years we will do a year-end tax planning. We didn't this year, but I find Kiplinger is a great place to go for that kind of checklist. Regulation and compliance. Remember, again, I'm going to keep beating the drum, you need to be flawless. The nature of technocracy is there's going to be a lot of gotcha software out there. Regulators are making money on charging civil money penalties. So just make sure you've got copies of everything. We've got a great Solaria report coming up on mortgage servicing and the fraudulent problems in mortgage servicing. And again, it's going to say, make sure to keep copies of all your documents. So this is a great time of year while you're doing the tax and regulatory planning to make sure that you have all your documentation and it's in order. Don't depend on third parties or financial institutions for your documentation. Every year in the annual wrap-up, we do a scenario design, and that's to help you with your planning. One of the scenarios this year, the two variables will be human versus inhuman, same as last year, but the other variables will be decline of the dollar accelerates rapidly or it doesn't. So it's going to be sort of the dollar market share. What does that mean to you? If we do get a decline in the market share of the dollar, it means an increase in the cost of household goods. If you look at the cost of essentials and household goods, they've been going up in the United States for 8 to 15% per year. For the last 5 years, from what I see of Europe, it's probably lower, but it's still meaningful. Please be prepared for that rate of increase to increase. And my biggest concern is not your ability. So I want you to work into your budget what happens if instead of your prices going up 10%, they go up 20% or 25%. So imagine a pretty big jump. I want you to be able to handle that price increase. But for planning purposes, the big problem is not the price increase. It's the deterioration in quality. So even though the price of food has gone up, you can't trust the quality, so you got to be a lot more careful. Even more importantly, it's an inability of people around you to adapt. It's one thing I notice because I drive a lot. If you are driving through populations of people who are really having trouble dealing with the stress and inability to handle what's happening economically, it can cause real risk, and so you have to be careful. So that can translate into risk and safety issues and the debasement of integrity, not just in people's behavior, but also in product quality and the quality of the work they do. Let me give you an example. This week, we saw numerous headlines about the Trump administration changing the regulations in food stamps that will result in up to 750,000 people being cut off in food stamps. That's the natural result of trade deficits. What we've outsourced, so instead of growing food next door to me in Tennessee, where my neighbors are running down to Walmart and buying food that's shipped in from 1,000 miles away. Corporate farming, for example, in Latin America. And I could have told you that was cheaper then, but once you're fighting trade deficits and the Chinese aren't buying treasuries anymore to finance your purchases at Walmart, then you have a problem. And so you need the food to be shipped out. You know, it's basically food is one of our biggest exports. So you need to be exporting food and not having the local population eat it. And the cost of shipping food in from out of the country becomes that much more painful when you're in the middle of sort of trade wars. So the solution, obviously, everything we can do to start to build local food supplies solves the quality problem and creates lots of local jobs or people doing it themselves. There's also an increased effort to diminish the health of the population. I'm going to talk about vaccine mandates tonight because the push for mandates is becoming hot and heavy. Here's the reality. If half the population is autistic, then 100% of the population is too busy doing caregiving to protest what's happening. It's a very gruesome picture, but it's real. The last thing is, in your business and professional life, you need to think about resilience. Everybody's different. Every place is different. So it's very hard to give generic advice. But if you look at what has happened to businesses and professions all over the country and around the world because of both infrastructure and disaster capitalism, the disruption is very, very serious. And disruption like this can destroy a small business. And so it's very important to be prepared. PG&E in California with the electrical outages is causing tremendous pain in the small business and small practice community. We have new reports now from a town in Southern California with water problems. Now they're saying they have to boil their water. Restaurants are not able to open. So whether it's water or electricity, you need to care about what the local infrastructure management is and how you're going to handle a hiccup. You know, so hiccups include stockpiling critical materials. Now's a good time with sales in the beginning of the year to stockpile all your office products and any non-perishable that you use, because if you look at the rate of inflation, it's only going to go up. I have a disaster recovery kit, and I have an agreement with another institution. If I can't use my office, I can basically move and set up shop very quickly in there, and that arrangement is pre-negotiated. And obviously, I have a generator which can go a couple days if the electricity gets caught. Usually, the electrical problems in my area are a few days, and a generator should be able to carry you for a few days. I've got one that comes on automatically if I'm out of town. So if you've got a lot of stuff in freezers, it pays to have a generator. So year-end planning, tax, regulation, making sure you're prepared for a scenario where inflation kicks up and the people around you have a hard time coping with it, and then make sure you're thinking about how to be resilient if you're in an area where you get infrastructure deterioration or disaster capitalism. So now's a good time to really focus on making sure your compliance is perfect and going to be resilient in 2020. Money and markets. I'm working with a Wednesday close because I'm recording this early on Thursday. The dollar's still holding strong. It's up 2% for the year. Not a big move, but it's certainly holding steady given all the assaults on it. Fixed income, the long Treasury ETF up 17.57%, intermediate up 9.2%. You can tell the market isn't fazed by FASB 56 yet. The bond aggregate up 8.46%, junk still doing very well, the junk ETF at 12.78%. Financial Times this week headline was U.S. distressed debt flashes warning sign for investors. More than 200 bonds in junk-rated index are trading at levels implying severe strain. The rollovers in the corporate market are coming in 2020. There's going to be real pain in the corporate bond market, so it's important to keep that out. If you have the time to be a knowledgeable investor, there may be opportunities, including on the related stocks. But the squeeze is coming, and you wouldn't know it to look at the fixed income ETFs, but it'll be here. Equities. The planet equity is on. I've been talking about this since 2014, but every time I turn around, I see more proof that that Western central banks are printing money and using it to securitize anything that moves on the planet. The S&P now up 26.36% for the year. That's a very strong performance. We're seeing resource wars all over the world. A perfect example, if you've been watching the politics in Bolivia. Bolivia is a major source of lithium, and basically, what the fight looks like is the lithium going to be controlled by the people of Bolivia or by the battery makers and tech firms in Silicon Valley? It looks very much to me like the intelligence firms on behalf of Silicon Valley are winning. Home builders flying up 40.46%. That's an astonishing performance. Again, a lot of emphasis that the U.S. millennials who are way behind in household formation relative to the baby boomer generation, they're about 8 to 10% behind, are getting ready to buy. I don't see how that exactly is going to work, but one of the things I know, the federal credit methadone is clearly headed for the U.S. housing market. So whether it's the inflation or the pouring of the federal credit, if you're a young person thinking of buying a home, all real estate is local, so I can't tell you about your local market, but the wave is coming, and it's very important that you stay ahead of it. VGK, the European ETF, now up 19.27%. You could tell from the NATO meeting this week, the Brits are feeling much better. The polls show that the Conservatives are going to walk away with the election. I think there was real concern about Jeremy Corbyn and what Labour might do to bollocks Brexit. But the Queen looks very happy, and so does Boris Johnson. Germany now up 17.53%. Development markets up 18.53%. The Saudi Aramco IPO went off this week, finally. They're raising $25.6 billion in the world's biggest IPO to date. Aramco is the state-owned oil company. That's a valuation of $1.7 trillion, which was short of what the prince and the kingdom wanted, but still much richer than they probably would have gotten if they tried to come out in New York. Chinese large caps up 5.66%, small caps up 7.48%, emerging markets up almost 10%. The commodity index up a little bit, 5.65%, gold up 14.57%, and silver up 21.25%. Pretty respectable, getting close to where the S&P is. Oil now up 36.95% for the year. Our stop story is the state of the dollar. One of the reasons I'm telling you to be prepared for higher inflation next year is the different forces arrayed against the dollar are huge. Now, if you look at the deeper game, remember what Mr. Global wants is digital currency. He doesn't care if it's a dollar or a euro or yen. If they're all done in digital form, that gives total central control. And you can do that with a one world currency, or you can do that with a 10 multipolar system, as long as they're digital. So The competition between the dollar and the other currencies is at the secondary level. The real game is moving everybody to digital, so beware. Hong Kong is, in my opinion, really a currency war. Hong Kong has its own Hong Kong dollar, hasn't been using the Chinese currency, and it's the Hong Kong dollar is pegged to the dollar. And there's no doubt, if you look at how the Chinese have been moving into Hong Kong and accelerating the transition, as opposed to respecting the 50 years that they promised, the danger was they were going to convert Hong Kong to the renminbi. And as that happened, the next thing you would know, of course, no Navy ships can go into Hong Kong. And there goes the South China Sea. It was interesting to see, despite the impeachment and everything else going on, that the Congress was very quick to move to support Trump in a censure of what the Chinese are doing in Hong Kong. The question, of course, that everybody keeps asking is, where does the dollar's strength come? It reminds me of the story of Samson in the Bible, where he's asked, you know, where is your strength? Nobody could figure out where it came from. If you look at all the factors that are supporting the U.S. dollar and have supported it for many years during the financial crisis, a lot of people expect the dollar to diminish in power. If nothing, it dramatically increased its power. Everybody looking for safe haven investments as a result of the financial fraud of the U.S. poured into U.S. Treasury bonds. Counterintuitive, but there it was. And of course, the Fed pumped out so much money that you could lend dollars all around the world and get everybody in the dollar bear trap. There's no doubt in my mind that two of the greatest sources of the strength behind the dollar is the extraordinary amount of hidden money and credit that the federal credit mechanism in the United States can field. And that's why FASB 56 is such an important issue. And that's why the missing money, not just at DOD, but at HUD, is so important and powerful. I also think that I'll call that black budget and hidden system of finance their financial bazooka. And of course, it's what I've been talking about for two decades. But I think they've married it with mind control and entrainment and the satellite and surveillance systems. And it's created a real juggernaut. Now, part of the bad feeling around the world is that juggernaut is depending on financial sanctions and more invasive legal and financial regulation extended out into the international systems. And there's no doubt it's pinching a lot of people's style, raising a lot of expense and causing a lot of trouble for financial institutions around the world. But all these things were also backed up with covert military intelligence and with enormous market size and liquidity. It's interesting, if you look at the history of when the dollar became the reserve currency, for between World War I and World War II, it really shared that role with pound sterling. And despite the fact that the U.S. became the largest economy in the world in the 1870s, they really didn't become the sole reserve currency until the end of, well, it's the Bretton Woods system a year before the end of the World War II. So it's almost 70 years. And one of the reasons was London managed the biggest market with the biggest size and liquidity. And there's no doubt the size and liquidity of the U.S. financial markets are an enormous contribution to protecting the dollar. Also, there's control of payment systems, which is why there's so much effort by the Russians and various people to provide alternative credit card systems, alternatives to SWIFT, and sort of alternative payment systems. And then, of course, our overt military and intelligence. Now, it turns out the Pentagon is looking to get more powerful on the overt side. They announced this week they want low-yield nukes. That means they want to be able to do targeted nuke explosions that don't have wider ramifications. It's a very scary thought, but it doesn't surprise me that they're asking for it. And finally, of course, there's the media power. There's no doubt that the Shriekometer does a lot to shepherd people here and there and sort of control the narrative. The currency question and the energy question are tied at the hip. One of the reasons we're talking about what's happening with currencies is that for many decades, since the Nixon shock in the early 70s, when the dollar went off the gold standard, that the dollar is really traded on an oil or petrodollar standard. And now we're watching the world of energy really changing as renewable energy gets more efficient. Of course, all sorts of speculation about breakthrough energy, including Lockheed and various people saying that they have cold fusion and can all of these sort of augur a radically lower energy cost over the next decade. And the question is, will the leadership use that to benefit themselves, or will they use it for everyone? There's no doubt, especially with the way they're reengineering the electrical system, I think they'll be able to target the cheaper energy into the areas they want. So imagine an opportunity zone gets targeted into a certain place, the Internet of Things goes in, and supposedly wireless energy at a much lower cost can be targeted into where they have big real estate positions. That's how they're going to make money on a lot of the lower energy costs is with the real estate. The changes in technology, the changes in what's happening in space, the changing in energy, all of these put the currency system in play. And there's no doubt the more the dollar is used to control globally, the more the pushback is upon us. If you live in the United States in certain parts of the developed world, it means you've been subsidized by being part of the dollar system. And the message from the world is we're tired of funding your subsidy. It's one of the reasons I want you, if you're in the U.S. or those areas of the world, I want you to be prepared for a kick up in the cost of household goods. If there's any symptom that the establishment expects that kick up in the cost of household goods, it's the fact that they're layering on the climate change op so heavily to make it fashionable to dramatically cut back on lifestyle. Well, if you look at the different headlines, technocracy is just on the march. It's implementing step by step. The Chinese are rolling out facial recognition. Headline this week that they're helping the UN set facial recognition standards. We saw a report and video of dog robot structures from soldiers from Boston Dynamic climbing stairs and opening doors being prototyped by Massachusetts policemen. So this technology is coming, and you need to think about how you're going to deal with it. And if there's any way you can stop it in a state municipal level, you want to. It's very, very dangerous in the wrong hands. Putin made another headline this week, jumping in on the French cultural wars. They were changing the definition of parent. It's interesting. Putin is really emerging as a leading voice against transhumanism, or what we now call subhumanism. Subhumanism is a real problem in the West. And the biggest evidence of that, we saw lots of it this week, is what John Rappaport calls Hotel Auschwitz. Not only are we experiencing ever greater layers of entrainment and mind control, but the violation of the Nuremberg Codes are abounding, and it's pretty frightening to see how many people think that's okay. That's a major line to cross. It really comes up with the vaccine issue. We're seeing an enormous push for mandates. California, I've discussed several times, passed new legislation, but now we see New York working on mandate legislations, which are pretty frightening, and an effort in the New York legislature to outlaw homeschooling. Apparently, one report was after their first round of mandates, homeschooling increased by 56%. Wouldn't surprise me. I've tried for many years to figure out what this is about, and I still, it's a multivariate equation, so it's difficult. The reality is, as Dr. Perot, who was on the Salier Report several weeks ago on the last wellness series before this week, said that 54% of the children in America have chronic disease. Parents with children with chronic disease, that requires massive amounts of their time. And of course, homeschooling requires a massive amount of time. And I believe that one of the goals of vaccines is to wipe out emotional IQ and intuitions. In other words, the ability of humans to resonate with each other and exercise their telepathic capabilities. But it also wipes out families, if you look at what it does to family economics and family time. I would note there's something going on in Samoa. I haven't had time to look at it. they say it's a measles epidemic, and they're doing forced vaccination of 100% of the population, putting red flags on houses of anybody who hasn't been vaccinated. If I had to guess, this is biowarfare, and it's a prototype of how to do something similar in the United States, so we need to be prepared. Whatever the push is, the bush is global, and it's coming top-down. And that means even though you're in a state which is you think could never adopt these kinds of things, there's no doubt they're doing the easy states early, but they're going to be headed all of our ways. There is a wonderful subscriber posted a link to a referendum in Maine to try and stop all of this. And it looked like a very impressive effort. Anyway, Soleri's going to donate. So whatever you need to do, you need to start doing it now. I had a great conversation with Alan Phillips this week, and one of the things I said to him is, the time has come for the vaccine activists to connect the dots to the money. If you have a vaccine-injured child, why are you donating to universities which are financing the companies that are making these vaccines? Why are you donating to churches whose endowments are financing the companies that make the harmful vaccines? Why are you putting money into IRAs and 401ks that are financing these companies? Why are you putting money into pension funds? Why aren't you saying something to your pension fund trustees that you don't want these companies purchased? Why are you buying municipal in state and local government that are promoting these mandates? Why are you allowing your state and municipal reserves to be invested, whether in the bonds or the companies? Why are you buying treasury bonds that are financing the CDC to do this and make a lot of money on their vaccine patents? And I could go on and on and on. We're going to have to connect the dots. And one of the reasons you have to connect the dots is all the political contributions and all the lobbyist fees get funded by the capital gains that come from doing things that promote these kinds of vaccines. Remember, if government passes a mandate, the stock trades up just on the anticipation of future sales. It doesn't even take the vaccines to roll out. The political furball in D.C. is increasing in intensity. And one of the things that's interesting is I've been driving around the country for several weeks now, almost for a month, and the reality is people are sick of it. I feel a real shift in America where America says, you know, we want to function, we want to focus on important and productive things, and what is going on in Washington is not productive, it's not useful, and, you know, something, we're just going to turn it off. So I see, you know, the disinterest is arising every day. Needless to say, the furball increased its intensity. Pelosi directed the House Democrats to proceed with articles of impeachment against Trump. From everything I've seen, they have failed completely to provide anything that is the basis of an impeachable offense. It's very similar to the Russia effort. It's a nothing burger, and it's cooked up. What's been amazing is how many high-priced people, whether it's politician or academics or people from the State Department, you can get to try and cook it up. But I posted several videos of Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio doing a fantastic job of cutting through the cobwebs and showing what a nothing burger this is. Someone is paying Pelosi and the Democrats to make something out of nothing. There's no way that Trump can get impeached unless you get 20 Republican senators. What's going to happen is the House will vote for impeachment, and then it will move to the Senate for a trial. Supposedly, initially, all of that was going to happen before the end of the year. Now Pelosi is trying to drag it out so that the trial happens in 2020. In the Senate, you need 20 Republican senators who will vote for impeachment. That's not going to happen. It would be political suicide. We even have a black congresswoman from Michigan saying, you know, let the voters decide if they want to throw Trump out. We're so close to election, it makes no sense to do this. So what's happening? Part of what's happening is pure distraction. For a variety of reasons, Congress can't talk about what's really going on and what's important, and so this is a distraction. I'm beginning to think that the kickbacks on Iran were bigger and wider than I had figured, and there's no doubt if they can get an impeachment happening, I think there's real hope that they can reinstate the Iran deal. It seems to me a lot of people got kickbacks and can't or don't want to give the money back, not to mention various liabilities, and not just kickbacks on the Iran deal, on all sorts of different contracts or arrangements. obviously, the Democrats are doing everything they can to lower Trump's strength coming into 2020. They failed to produce a winning candidate, and they're struggling to come up with something or get one of the people they have to work. The media has been brutal. It's interesting, if you look at some of the testimony and see what's going on and the important things, it's one picture. If you read the media, it's just, you know, it's back to cooking the nothing burger into what looks like something. At the NATO meeting, we had several world leaders dishing out on Trump, and interestingly enough, that was some intelligence agency picked that up, dished it out, and it was all designed to make Trump look ridiculous on the world stage, all part of, you know, helping along with the impeachment. I do think that Trump has been very disruptive, and I would say the same thing about the European leaders as the U.S. leaders. I think he's rocking the kickback boat, and that's hiccuping a lot of money and liability. And it's a reminder watching everybody that people who win in a rigged game get stupid. You know, as a group, they're very committed to style, very committed to process, very committed to sort of not hiccuping each other. And one of the things that's interesting about Trump has done a magnificent job of really listening to Main Street and going out, doing the rallies, listening to people. He's learned a lot. He's come a long way in this process. And I don't think the establishment that I see appreciates that quality in him. They don't think they need to hear from the grassroots or from the people. They have a plan and they're proceeding with their plan. It's interesting to see how kind of stuck almost everybody in the system is. And that's one thing I'll say about Trump. He's a high learning speed, hardworking guy. And he's a lot less stuck than what we're seeing from various people as they take a cheap shot at Trump. In part emboldened by the fact that he's the king of the cheap shot. Anyway, what's important to realize when all of this is going on is this deep state is moving along quite nicely without Trump in Congress. So we have FASB 56 kicked in, the cloud contracts are kicked in, the JEDI is now in the contract protest phase, Amazon protesting the Microsoft win. But the JEDI contract will get let sometime in 2020. You know, the global wars continue. We even say Trump indicating that he might send another 14,000 soldiers to the Middle East. That's far from backing out. You wonder what the impeachment had to do with that. The effort to weaken and disperse the civil service continues. We're watching major increases in global space budgets, including a big increase announced this week for Europe. And the powers that be are proceeding on digital currencies, 5G, quantum computing, etc. So if you look at the deeper game, it's moving lickety-split towards technocracy and central control. And to a certain extent, the world isn't noticing. If it is noticing, it's paying attention to the furball. Our hero this week was someone Bridget chose, Greg Semenza, who has done research on the relationship between oxygen and disease. You can read all about him on the commentary at the website. Our blast from the past is winter wellness. We're coming into that season. Again, it's my favorite time of year, lots of merriment and good things, but there's no doubt that the colder weather in many parts of the world can put more stress, and it's a great time to listen to Dr. Laura Thompson talk about how to strengthen your immune system during the winter. Let's go to the movies. Also a pick from Bridget is Sky Birdsall, who is a yoga teacher and nutrition coach. That was one of the two interviews that Bridget did for breathing exercises, walks through 5 breathing techniques. I hope you will find, whether from here, there are many other great sources on the internet, you will find breathing exercises that are practical and right for you. To me, breathing exercises are something you can do anywhere, anytime, any place. They're highly economic, and oxygen can have a major impact on your health. Our interview this week is Bridget Mouchet doing breathing exercises. I called Bridget and asked her if she would do this. I was reading a book on oxygen and just thinking again and again about the importance of oxygen to our health. And as I've been driving around the country for so many years, I just see so many different signs that the animals and the plants seem to have less energy. Everything seems to get more tired. And I don't know if it's the weakening of the electromagnetic field. I don't know if it's the spraying. But one possibility is it's the lowering of the oxygen content in the atmosphere. One of the reasons I like to live in the country with so many trees around me is I just feel like there's more oxygen. But I'm convinced that one thing we can do for our health is make sure we're getting plenty of oxygen and that the oxygen we're taking in is getting to the different parts of our body. Do what I say, not what I do. I constantly try to remember to do breathing exercises and things that will help me here. But I really believe if I did a better job, it would make a bigger difference. And that's going to be one of my New Year resolutions. So I really appreciate Bridget doing this because I think it's so important. And not only is it important, but it's so economic. I think we're coming into a period where anything you can do for yourself to take care of your health is so much better, you know, than going into the healthcare system. Okay, ask Catherine. A couple great links, including one about Jeffrey Epstein's private banker. You know, for some reason, the Epstein story just won't go away. Then somebody sent a link on the town in California that got the advisory not to drink the water. It's amazing how much disruption it can cause families and businesses. The cost of fixing the water system versus the cost of the harm done when you don't. It's another reason that it's so important that citizens take an interest in mapping out the financial and natural resources in their place and making sure that the state and local government is managing them properly. Hi, Catherine. The question is a constant source of intrigue, prescient and compelling. Some countries seem to be splitting while others are reforming. The Southern spirit of independence in the form of Texas has resurfaced while China remains by far the most concerning. Of course, every country, region, district is unique. But has any research been done for a 21st century template? Inalienable rights or mere human rights given by man? Would it include a bill of financial rights? What would citizens actually want? A return to more familiar Western customs and cultural tradition seems to me to be well underway. But for those pilgrims seeking their own Plymouth, do they need to update our means of governance? Are you aware of any research being done in this regard? To say thank you for your work seems wholly inadequate. That is a great question. And I'm going to think about that. When I finish writing State of Our Currencies, I'm going to be writing Take Action. And I'm going to see if I can do some research, maybe get some other people to do some research. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. It's just a great question. Next person says, have facts and opinions that would be valuable for your 2019 annual wrap-up. A sample of my work is attached. Text is below. Okay, I will take a look. I have always been somewhat skeptical about chemtrails until I saw this for myself. I was driving in Jacksonville, Florida yesterday, and saw them in action as they flew over, and then today in Palm Coast, Florida. Perhaps tomorrow, the next town south of us, Jax, is 45 minutes north of Palm Coast. Is there a good place that tracks this sort of stuff? I attached some pictures I took while in Palm Coast. I would recommend you start with the Clifford Carnicom interview we did. It's a two-hour special in 2010. It's still the best thing I've ever seen. There are numerous websites that track it. Clifford's doesn't. I don't believe that the Carnicom Institute tracks spraying day to day. Geoengineering Watch, run by Dane Wigington, I believe does, but you should find his and others on a search. But I would definitely start with Clifford Carnicom at the Carnicom Institute, but check out our two-hour special in 2010. Hi, Catherine. It was wonderful to meet you and other subscribers at the Portland event last week. I want to mention a specific interview from the Body Electric Summit with Dr. Paul Anderson describing a new form of light therapy administered through fiber optic laser. I think you'll find this interview the most fascinating and time-worthy of all in the series. Here's a link to the technology. I'm also including a link from Michael McAvoy, another speaker from the BES, for subscribers suffering with smoke inhalation issues in CA and Australia. Also, will you share with me your assessment of the pulsed harmonic PEMF device in general and compare it to your QRS? Thank you for doing that. The Body Electric Summit looked fantastic, and I got it, but I haven't had time to watch. But I'll start with Dr. Anderson, so I really, really appreciate that. Pulse versus QRS. I have promised that I will really see what I think of pulse, but I haven't used it enough to have an opinion. And of course, I use the QRS, the quantum resonance system, and find it really helps me to balance my metabolism, particularly when I've had to do a lot of screen time for work. So, but I look forward to really getting mastery of how to use the pulsed harmonic. Okay, that's it for this week. Coming up, the state of our currencies next week, a lot to talk about. And then we go in, as we do every Christmas, to 2 weeks of our Best of the Soleri Report. We have the Best of the Soleri Report 2019, Soleri Team's pick for the top four interviews, and then the Best of the Soleri Report wrap-ups. This year, we're going to do all four news trends and stories, me and Joseph chewing through all the news. It's a perfect backdrop to the first 2 weeks in January when Joseph and I will sort through the top stories of 2019. Then we roll into the annual wrap-up. We're going to use the annual wrap-up to finish off Deep State Tactics 101 and roll it up into a book collection. Don't forget to check out our holidaygreetings.soleri.com. And our Friday Christmas music was going to be going all month. Great selections. Anyway, as I said, this has been a remarkable year. And as it draws to a close, I hope there's going to be time for you to celebrate. Again, this is my favorite time of year. Family, friends, and feasting are in order. So, ladies and gentlemen, until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.